There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome to NFL Live, presented by USAA.
Coming up on NFL Live, Antonio Brown prepares to meet with the league, hoping to present his side of the story. The first step in a potential return to the field, but not so fast. He's on Twitter today. Mel Kiper Jr. joins us. He's got a latest big board. He'll talk about the injury to Tua and what it could mean for his draft status. And Panthers linebacker Luke Kuechly joins us. He'll weigh in on Cam Newton, Kyle Allen, and Christian McCaffrey, as well as his outlook for the second half of the season. We are glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. I'm Wendy Nix, Josina Anderson, Victor Cruz, Rob Ninkovich, Steve Young will join us shortly. We start with Antonio Brown. He is scheduled to meet with the league next week regarding those accusations of sexually assaulting multiple women. Sources telling our Josina Anderson on Thursday he's eager apparently to present his side, hoping that he'll be cleared and potentially find a new place to play. Before we get to his response today, JoJo, I'm going to ask you to fill in the blanks here and tell us where we are.
Well, right now he has the opportunity to finally tell his side. I mean, we basically heard everything from the people who have put these accusations around him since he got released from the Patriots. Everything that I'm told is that he's eager to do so and tell his side of the story, and that he feels good about that. And essentially, this gives the NFL an opportunity per a resolution of interviewing Antonio Brown and also getting a resolution in this case for other NFL teams to then hear that and then subsequently make a decision on Antonio Brown about what they're going to do, because as of right now, he is still not playing with the NFL and we're seeing other wide receivers get signed in the interim.
Well, and I would assume here that teams are skeptical, not knowing what his status will be, if he'd be like, they can't make a move to sign him or work with him, not knowing if he'll be eligible to play. So until that happens, he's stuck.
Absolutely, because he is a free agent. Teams can sign him right now if they wanted to, but have not, with this pending over his head, as to have more clarity to what his future would be in the National Football League, you know, pending everything that is going on. What we also do know today is that per the attorney of the accuser, Brittany Taylor, that he, on the behalf of his lawyer, was served with a civil complaint as well.
Well, then again, he's scheduled to meet with the league next Wednesday. This was just a short time ago on Twitter, and we'll paraphrase to some extent, given the profanity, but it says, "Imagine conforming to a system, giving it 100% to see them treat me like this is unfair. Making money off my sweat and blood, bleep the NFL. I'll never play in that bleep. Treat black people the worst, clear my name, and go bleep yourself." Tough timing when you're about to present your case to the league.
I just wanted to give this a little bit more context, too, as to why there may be underlying frustration there. If the NFL goes along with interviewing Antonio Brown next week, Thursday, okay, that would be 7 games remaining to go in the NFL. Obviously, that would be towards the end of the week, so we're presuming he would not be playing at earliest, let's say, even if that happened, right, at best until next week. If you're going on the baseline of what the NFL has put forth in their domestic violence policy when a player has been accused or has, you know, dumped something in relation to domestic violence, sexual assault involving force or anything like that. We know that the NFL has said that the baseline of a suspension could be at minimum 6 games pending mitigating circumstances. So if that were to happen in this case, with 6 games remaining after this potential interview, that could potentially effectively not allow him to play the rest of this regular season. Now, there are sources that have told me that Antonio Brown still feels like he has the potential to play this year and is optimistic that that could happen prior to this tweet, and that there are teams potentially interested if everything goes in the direction that he would like. But obviously there is another side presenting their, you know, case as well, and we'll see how it falls.
There's just so much frustration, and you can kind of feel it with Antonio Brown. You can feel it with what he says when he's spoken to, or you can feel it when he tweets. It's just interesting because Rob and I were just, you know, off camera. We were looking at his Instagram story, and he was working out, and he was showing his meals, his meal plan. So he still wanted to come back. It looked like he was still in preparation to play. And obviously, JoJo, as you shed light on his frustrations, I guess those feelings are bubbling to the top now and leading him to tweet those things that you see there. I just wish that he didn't tweet those things. I wish he had someone to tell those things to and not necessarily tweet it, because every time that he does so, it pushes him further back in the minds of owners and GMs and teams in terms of wanting to have his services because of the energy and the, you know, what he's building around himself, given these comments and given these tweets. It just sets him back more and more. If, in fact, he does want to return to the NFL, tweets like that don't help his cause. Whether he's right or wrong, whether he's warranted in his feelings or not, they just don't help his case, Rob.
No, I agree. And look, he says he doesn't want to play football anymore. He's done with it, right? But he's going to go through a process here. And if the NFL says, OK, you're clear, is he just come back and play? And he's already said, I'm done with the NFL.
Well, he said that today. He's also last week or the week before that he wanted to play.
He wanted to play, and then he's back and forth and back and forth. You would think that there would be some advising to, hey, no more tweets, no more anything that could potentially go against you when you're going through a case and you're going through a process that could potentially take you away from the NFL or take you away this year. Mm-hmm. So it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, look, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know what's going on in his life. I don't know. So, you know, obviously there's some issues. There's some problems. There's things going on. But the one thing I do know is he has a family. He has children. So as just a person, I'd like to see him get back in the right track and, you know, be a productive person in the NFL. But it just seems like right now all these tweets and the things that are going on and the stuff that's outside of his control, you know, it's just not looking good for him right now.
Well, I think what we also can understand from the tweet is that Antonio Brown is under pressure. Mm-hmm. You feel that he is under pressure because he has not been allowed to do, you know, per his actions or not his actions. And that's for the NFL to determine what he's been doing for so long. Mm-hmm. And there are also people who depend on him and probably feel that pressure. And that is coming. And maybe that is coming out through the tweet. The other thing someone said to me is that in their hopes, and this is obviously with regards to Antonio Brown's case, is that they're hoping that the NFL's delay in terms of interviewing him next week has been per due diligence and everyone that they've needed to talk to and investigate with everything surrounding the case, and not, you know, as a means of not having him play in the NFL per the timing of when the interview as of right now is set up.
I also just, I don't want to neglect some of the allegations against him and say that I'm in any support of anything like that. Mm-hmm. So first they need to clarify what happened and what's going on moving forward. Yeah. If those things are accurate, then he shouldn't play football.
The biggest thing for me, at least with Antonio Brown, I want him to confide in someone. I feel like there's no one out there, at least from what we see, for him to confide in it, in someone, whether it's a former NFL player or a mentor or whoever, that he can speak to about what he's going through and his feelings, because you can feel it bubbling up every tweet, every time we speak to him, every time he opens his mouth. You feel that pressure that you talked about, Joe, with everything that's going on. You want someone to be in his ear and say, look, just chill. Everything's going to be all right. Ride the wave.
And it doesn't mean that someone's not in his ear or that he's not getting that advice. Because obviously Antonio Brown is his own man.
He
can make his own decisions.
Well, I've also heard sources that people have attempted to reach out to him.
Of course, absolutely.
And he's not answering
the phone. But what inevitably happens is still what, you know, what he chooses to do in terms of tweeting.
Let me stop you right there, because as I mentioned, Steve Young is with us. And Steve, I know you have thoughts on this as well. Would you be comfortable with Antonio Brown on your team?
Not right now. And look, so much of it is self-inflicted. And until he recognizes that, we all know that the league is not perfect. And you'll never find a perfect league. And you'll always have complaints. There's tons of mitigation out there that are true. Like, there's things that are true that create behavior. But until you say to yourself, you know what, I think this as a quarterback. The ball's in my hands. I throw an interception, it's in their hands. There's a ton of things that happen in between that are true, that created mitigation that allowed this horrible thing to happen. But in the end, the ball was in my hand, and now it's in theirs, and I need just to own it. I'm accountable. And until that kind of switch takes place and he starts to say, look, I'm accountable for a lot of this and I'm going to fix it. You don't have to give up on the truth and the mitigation that's in between. Those are all true, too. But until you own it all, I don't think there'll be a team that at this point, with all that you've seen, to say, you know what, until he kind of just owns it all and starts to gain that the ability to be accountable for it all, that he can say, look, I'm in charge of it. I can do this. And he can show the consistency of behavior. That's when he can start to hum. He just doesn't understand that all of the victimization is real, but it's not helpful. And he's just exploding. And we all see it. And we're all like, don't do that, because we understand that there's mitigation, but just start owning it. And then we'll start getting behind you. And until that time that he starts to own it, we're stuck. We want to try to help him.
I think you're right. Stuck is the right word. And we just go round and round again. The next step, he will meet with the league next week, and we'll continue to follow what happens there. We do have football tonight. We'll switch gears now. The Chargers are looking for their fifth consecutive win over the Raiders, which is their longest winning streak since a streak of 13 straight from 2003 to 2009. The Chargers will have to slow down running back Josh Jacobs, who has been on a tear. He's rushed for at least 100 yards in each of his last four games. And this game will have playoff implications. If the Raiders win, they'll have a 33% chance to make the playoffs. However, if they do not, if they lose, it falls to just 12%. That's according to ESPN's FPI. Paul Gutierrez joins us now. And Paul, what do the Raiders need to do to keep Bosa and Ingram off of Carr?
I tell you what, Wendy, they got to do what they've been doing recently anyway, and that starts with John Gruden continuing to call what, you know, dare I say, a masterful opening script of plays, which includes, as we mentioned earlier, Josh Jacobs running wild and establishing a tone early. Obviously, teams want to keep guys honest, the pass rushers that are coming in, but when you've got two elite guys like Ingram and Bosa, that sets things up even better. It keeps them honest. They're not able to just pin their ears back and come after Carr with aplomb. But that might be a little bit tough because the Raiders do have two of their starting offensive linemen are questionable to play, center Rodney Hudson, right tackle Trent Brown. And yet, even with those guys out last week, they were able to run the ball. I asked Derek Carr about a little bit. He just shook his head and said, you know what, it just shows to the depth of this team.
And Paul, on the other side of this game is Melvin Gordon rounding into form after his lengthy holdout.
Yep. Yeah, and from the Charger perspective, Coach Anthony Lynn spoke this week to Raider reporters on a conference call, and he said basically Melvin Gordon had a lot of rust to knock off after that lengthy holdout. So he's played four games now, and that's basically his own personal training camp and exhibition season. As Lynn said, with Melvin Gordon, usually by this point of a season, he's banged up, nicked up. Instead, he's fresh and ready to roll right now, too. So, again, it comes down to, with the new offensive play caller in Shane Steichen, the Chargers have a more balanced attack. As Lynn said this week, you can't be one-dimensional in the NFL and expect to survive.
Paul, thank you. And it's interesting. This game, because it's sort of the middle class, right? Both these teams hovering around 500. And tonight could go a long way. If you come out of this with a loss, I think you're putting yourself in a real hole. You got a ways to go if you win, but you got a shot. What's key in this game for both teams, Rob?
Well, I think number one is the Oakland has to run the football with Josh Jacobs. We've seen the ability. If you can run the football, you have success with passing the ball in the play action game. So with Josh Jacobs, him being a north-south runner, he's very physical, but yet he has the ability to sidestep, cut, and get up the field. And I like when he makes these cuts, he gets up the field as fast as possible to gain yardage. So he's got 740 yards right now. Six touchdowns, almost. He's at 4.9 yards a carry. That's pretty impressive.
We can call it five.
We'll call it five.
I'm being technical.
But when you can hand the ball off like that, it takes so much pressure off your quarterback. When you are setting up second and fives, third and twos, third and fives, it just makes your offense that much more manageable. So for Carr, it's a little bit easier to navigate through the game plan when you can just hand the football off. So, look. We saw it last year with the Patriots, Seattle when they had Lynch. If you can hand the ball off and run the football with success, it helps everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And with the Chargers, I feel like they have to try and negate that running game. With Ingram and Bosa on that defensive line, they have to figure out a way to keep that running game of the Raiders bottled up, intact, not have Josh Jacobs rip off those 20 and 15-yard runs, because that's what keeps the game intact, right? That's how the Raiders are able to control the clock, control the pace of the game, and keep themselves in it throughout the duration of the game. So the D-line of the Chargers will have their work cut out for them in terms of keeping Josh Jacobs bottled up and putting some pressure on Derek Carr in those third and long or third and short situations.
And I just think with the way that the Chargers were able to be victorious over the Packers last week, it'll be interesting to see if their offense can continue that flow now that they have a new offensive coordinator, especially as they're trying to get in stride, bringing Melvin Gordon back and having that initial adversity when he came back, changing things up with the staff and getting a huge win over Green Bay, to see if they can couple that now tonight with another win will be very interesting. And of course, later we'll talk about our picks so you can see.
Yes, seriously.
Which way some of us on the set are leaning.
Here we go.
In addition to the picks, we'll do a little playoff predictions for both these teams too, since as I mentioned, they're right at that 500 mark.
Yep.
We'll go through their schedules and kind of see where we think they might land. Up next for that bad, bad man are the Carolina Panthers. They will head to Lambeau over the weekend. And Aaron Rodgers, you can expect, will see a lot of zone coverage against the Panthers. Carolina allowing opposing quarterbacks to complete just 64% of their passes. And their 7 interceptions in zone is tied for the most in the NFL. They will be gunning for Aaron Rodgers. But first, we say hello to Panthers linebacker Luke Kuechly, who joins us now. And Luke, I will ask you about Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in just a minute. But I want to first start with what this season has been like for Carolina. You played with Cam a long time. Obviously, he's been shut down for the season. You had a rookie quarterback have to step in. What's the transition been like over the first half of the season?
Well, I think it's been good because Kyle was here. You know, last year he played at the end of the season, so guys get an opportunity to play with him a little bit. And then as the season progressed, obviously the situation with Cam popped up, but Kyle stepped in. He's done a really good job, and I think a lot of the credit has to do with the fact that during OTAs and training camp, he prepared as if he was a starter, and I think that's something that's important for guys that have an opportunity to play like him. But Cam's been great with him. He's been in the meetings. He's been helping him a lot out, and I think that's one of the best things for Kyle to have a resource like Cam that's helped him a lot this year.
And Luke, I know you and Cam have become friends. You've played together for quite some time, and he's still around, to your point. He's in the locker room. He's working in the quarterback room. You know, how frustrating or how difficult is this for a quarterback who you know wants to compete?
Well, I think the thing that's hard for anybody, regardless of what the position is when you see all your buddies out there having fun, you miss it. You miss playing the game. And for all of us, this is what we love to do. And a guy like Cam, that's such a competitor as he is, the hardest thing for him is just not being able to play. And I think, you know, he's supporting Kyle. He loves everything about the team, but he just wants to play. So for him not being able to play, I'm sure is tough on him. But he's been a great guy for Kyle, and he's still fun to have around with the energy that he does bring.
Meanwhile, Luke, Christian McCaffrey leads the league in rushing touchdowns. He has just flat out played football all season. What's it like watching him from the sidelines?
Well, I think it just shows you, you know, everything you see on Sunday is fantastic, but the stuff that makes Christian is what he does behind the scenes and during the off season and during the week to make sure that every week he can go out and do what everybody's seen, because that stuff just doesn't happen. And we always joke about it. We don't know how he does it every week. We don't know how he goes out and plays every play and touches the ball 35 times and then comes back out the next week and it's like he's brand new all over again. So he takes great pride and take care of himself. He's an ultra competitor. He loves the game of football, and he's been special this year for us.
Luke, I know it won't be the first time you faced Aaron Rodgers 3 times, I think, in your career. So not a huge sample size, but nevertheless, I guess it's probably memorable. What is the most difficult thing about facing a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers?
Everybody on the field's in play, and I think that's what makes him special, his ability to extend plays within the pocket, move around, move within the offensive line in the pocket. And then his arm strength is fantastic. If he's on the right side of the field, the guy in the very far part of the left side of the field is still open. And I think that's the most difficult thing about Aaron Rodgers, is his ability to extend plays and get the ball anywhere on the field, regardless of where the guy is. And that's what we've talked about all week. You got to stay on your guy the whole play, because he can extend it and make something happen regardless of what position the play is in.
You know, it's funny. I think because you've had a quarterback change and Cam is so dynamic, and then you had a younger quarterback start, we talk so much about this Panthers offense that sometimes your defense flies under the radar a little bit. How would you describe this iteration of the Carolina Panthers defense?
I think guys are having fun. I think that's what makes playing defense, you know, productive. When guys have fun, you bring a guy like Trey Boston in that's got constant positive energy, and it's real. And I think that's what a lot of people appreciate about him. Bring a guy in like Bruce Irvin that has good energy, plays extremely hard, great edge. He's been really good for us, not only in the pass rush, but also in the run game. He plays physical, he sets good edges. And you bring an older guy in like Gerald, guy that's been experienced, he's been around, and he just wants to flat out win. So I think we brought some good guys in the offseason. We've also had some guys coming back that have grown within the system, but guys are having fun. And I think that's the most important thing about our defense. Guys get excited for each other, whether it's a sack or an interception or a forced fumble. Nobody on the defense cares who does it as long as we're playing as a group and we're making plays.
Well, Luke, it'll be about 30 degrees, I think, this weekend at Lambeau. The good news is no snow, but having grown up in the Carolinas, it is certainly not 30 degrees right now in Charlotte. Do you have to get ready for that this early in the season? I mean, we're into November, but still early November.
Yeah. Well, it's been warm here. It's probably 65, 70 out of practice today, so it's going to be a little bit different on game day, but our equipment guys do an awesome job. Greg and Donnie will make sure that we have everything we need in the locker room, on the field, traveling to the game. Those guys do a great job. So when we show up on Sunday to the locker room, you have an assortment of things to pick from. I'm sure they'll have the heated benches on the field and the coats and the hats and the hand warmers and the thermals, and it'll be fun. So that's what makes playing football at this point in the season exciting, is you get some weather, you get some bad weather, get some cold weather, and it just makes it a little bit more exciting.
Listen, they may do a great job, but I'm not sure it matters for you. Is it true you haven't worn sleeves since high school?
No, I haven't played in a lot of cold games, so I think that's the benefit for me. We played in Carolina when we were in Boston at school. We were done in November. And then down here, we play games in the dome with New Orleans and Atlanta, and then here the weather's always nice. So I've been very fortunate not to have too many cold weather games.
All right. Maybe you got one coming. Luke, best of luck. We'll be watching we'll be watching the rest of the way. Safe travels.
Thank you very much.
He's our very own draft guru, Mel Kiper Jr., and he's released a new big board today looking towards the 2020 NFL draft. And ahead of this weekend's huge matchup, number 2 LSU against number 3 Alabama. 8 of the top 25 play on these two teams, including both starting quarterbacks, both of which are ranked in the top 6. And with that, we will say hello to Mel Kiper Jr., who joins us now. And Tua appears to be a game-time decision, Mel, with that high ankle sprain right up until that 3:30 Eastern kickoff on Saturday. Do you still have him as the highest-rated QB on your big board? Assuming he plays, what do you hope to see?
Well, I think you're coming off an injury like this, Wendy, second time, you know, last year an ankle, this year an ankle. Yeah, there's going to be a little rust, and it's a defensive LSU that hasn't been dominant, but they're still awfully talented with a lot of quality athletes, number of which 4 or 5 of those guys are going to be in the NFL and in the not-too-distant future. So I think with Tua, Wendy, it's more about getting back on the field, obviously trying to get back to that level we know he can play at, but moving forward through the season, you know, culminating in the Iron Bowl against Auburn, another very good defense, and then hopefully for them moving forward into the Final Four, how does he finish things out once he gets back to 100% from this ankle injury will determine ultimately if he remains the number one quarterback in this draft or falls back just a bit.
Mel, listen, given the talent on this team, it might be easier to ask who you won't be watching on Alabama, but instead I'll ask who else you'll be paying close attention to on Saturday.
Well, the guys that make it easier for two of those receivers, Wendy, they're big time. Jerry Jeudy, I could have it number one. I did have him back at number one back in August. He's at number 3. He's got the same grade as Tua. He's a Marvin Harrison type. Then you look at the speed option, Henry Ruggs III, who with that 4.25 to 4.3 speed, those underneath routes can become 60-yard touchdowns in a blink. Not to mention Devontae Smith, who's had a huge year. And he's now, of course, got the touchdown pass to beat Georgia to win the national title when he was a true freshman. He's been phenomenal this season. He's got a late first, early to mid second round grade. So there are 3 big time options at wide receiver, in addition to Jalen Waddle, the sophomore.
Meanwhile, LSU quarterback Joe Burrow has been a fast riser up the big board this season. When it's all said and done, is it possible he will be or could be number 1 overall in April?
No question he could be, Wendy. And this game's important for him because he's healthy. And you think about Florida, Auburn, Texas. He's already had quality defenses he's worked against. This defense isn't vintage Alabama. Five of their top six tacklers from last year aren't there. Dylan Moses, great linebacker, injured. But Joe Burrow, the way he anticipates his throws, the way he sees the field, he's the ultimate competitor. He has enjoyed as meteoric a rise up the board as any player in this draft. When he's gone from that third to fifth round area all the way up to maybe being the number one pick overall. And that's possible if he plays well here and obviously throughout the rest of the season. Joe Burrow has solidified an early first round grade.
Wow, so much on the line. Give me another Tiger to watch over the weekend.
Well, those receivers for Alabama got to be covered by somebody. Christian Fulton is a cornerback at LSU, Wendy. Think about Patrick Peterson, all those other LSU corners. But this is a kid who could lock down one side and one receiver. He's that good. Anticipation, awareness in coverage. He will tackle very well against the run game. And Christian Fulton has a mid-first round grade. Watch him when he's matched up against Judy, Ruggs, or Smith. Fulton's going to be, I think, a guy to go somewhere, like I say, when you talk about the day one of the draft, night one of the draft, somewhere between, say, 15 and 25.
All right, Mel, here is a look at which teams currently have the best chance to claim the top pick in the draft. This is according to ESPN's Football Power Index. Despite getting their first win of the season last week, the Dolphins still hold a slight edge over the winless Bengals. These two teams will face each other in week 16. So back to the quarterbacks. You have four in your top 25, and Georgia's Jake Fromm not far behind. Yep. A record five quarterbacks went in the first round in 2018. How many could we potentially see this time?
Well, I think you're going to see three. Jacob Eason, Wendy from Washington, I hope goes back for another year. He would be in a group with Trevor Lawrence, Clemson, and Justin Fields, Ohio State, to make it three Super Bleu Chip quarterbacks next year. This year, I think that you'd look at the big three. And right now, it's Tua, Justin Herbert, Oregon, who's just coming off a great game against USC, and he's got enormous talent with his arm, his size, and athleticism and speed. Then you have Joe Burrow. So all three of those guys, right now it's a three-horse race, Wendy. Make no mistake about it. It's too early right now. It's too close to call. But those three, any one of those three could be the number one pick overall. And all three of those quarterbacks, I think, go in the top 10.
Mel Kiper, thank you. We will be talking to you a lot more as we move toward the end of the season. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Wendy.
It's Sunday Night Football, and it will be the Cowboys who host the Vikings in a battle between Dak Prescott and Kirk Cousins. Dak has owned Kirk in his career, winning all four of the previous matchups. Ed Werder has more from Dallas.
The Cowboys, Wendy, provided Dak Prescott new opportunities in promoting Kellen Moore to create the offense and call the plays, bringing in highly regarded John Kitna as his position coach. They've urged Prescott to play with a more aggressive mindset and empowered him to use the whole field. Prescott's responded by taking his performance to unprecedented levels in this, his fourth NFL season. In his contract year, Prescott's the only player in the NFL to rank in the top five in yards per attempt, third, and completion rate, fifth. Nobody in this building will be surprised if Prescott emerges as an MVP candidate this season. In fact, they already believe he's one of the top five quarterbacks in the game. When I asked Prescott about that perspective, he said he has an immense amount of confidence in himself and the people around him, that his priority, though, is on winning and winning the Super Bowl, believing everything individually will come if that happens.
Ed, thank you. We are now in our Domino's pregame headquarters, and we'll look at the keys to this matchup. Rob, I'll start with you and the Cowboys. Have the football.
Yeah, so when you're playing the Cowboys, you want to stop the run, right? And I know the Vikings, that's what they're going to say all week. Let's stop the run. Let's stop the run. So in the passing game, I'm going to have to go with Michael Gallup because of the fact that Amari Cooper is a little bit banged up. He did come back and play last week, but they're going to put the coverage towards him. So I think Michael Gallup, he's got 29 receptions for 454 yards. It's almost the total of last year in his rookie season. He's almost there, about 50 yards short. So I do believe that he's going to have a big game in the passing game if the Cowboys want to have success.
All right, Victor, we'll follow up. There's two sides to this equation. The key when the Vikings have the football.
Well, I think when the Vikings have the ball, you got to look at Dalvin Cook. I think the type of year that he's having, he's really having one of those breakout kind of years and understanding where he is as a running back. And it's going to be him against Jalen Smith and that linebacking core of the Dallas Cowboys. Are they going to be able to keep him bottled up and not rip off those big plays and keep him within those tackles and keep him bottled up? That's going to be the name of the game. It's going to come down to which playmakers make the most plays to put their team over the top. And I think Dalvin Cook is a guy that the Dallas Cowboys will have to worry about and account for when he's in the backfield and has the football.
And it's not just the fact that they have Dalvin Cook, but that they're balancing the running game with the passing game better now. Because I remember when the Vikings were playing the Giants and Dalvin Cook came up to me and he said, this is when that whole stuff was going on with Stephon Diggs. And he was even saying to me about his team members that they have to get used to the fact that I'm here now and right. contributing. Because before, when he was injured, they were able to go without him and his backups weren't as good. So to see that balance now take place is what I think is interesting. And for him to have 800 plus rushing yards and 9 touchdowns after that, you know, the health of his injuries, I think is a
And I don't know if they get Adam Thielen back this week, but having him whenever he's healthy again will pay dividends for the Vikings.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Thank you, Tess. A report out of Cincinnati from Bengals Nation reporter Ben Baby says A.J. Green will not play this week against the Ravens. The hope, by the way, was that he might return. The swelling apparently in his ankle earlier in the week and would not feel comfortable playing without going through a full practice, which he's been unable to do. Also, Jamison Hensley in Baltimore reporting Lamar Jackson is not practicing Thursday due to an illness. The hope is that he'll be back on Friday. Well, there is at least one good way to block out the noise, and Mitchell Trubisky feels like he's figured it out. He wants the televisions turned off inside Halas Hall to insulate the struggling team from all the outside criticism. Here's what he said.
Trying to get some of these TVs in the building turned off because you got too many people talking on TV about us and what they think about us, what we should do, what we are and what we're not, but they don't really know who we are or what we're capable of people or what we're going through or what we're thinking. It's just the outside viewers looking in. And so, yeah, tunnel vision, earmuffs, and just come to work every day and try to get better and get back to what we know we're capable of doing.
Steve Young joins us. Steve, what's your take on the idea that he's verbalizing turning off the TV? Certainly, I understand the singular focus, but what's your take there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to overreact to that because I think that it's, look, it's human nature. I mean, Sam Darnold's here and seeing ghosts. I mean, like, it's human nature. Young quarterbacks especially, you go through these kind of valleys of death, and you've got to figure out a way out of them. And Mitch is in a, not a death cycle, but he's definitely, you know, in a bad spot. And so I like his, what he did say is, look, I'm tunnel vision, I'm going to get, you know, super focused. But you can't, in many ways, you can't let the outside forces, you have to own them. In other words, recognize that, you know, everyone's talking about you. Don't be afraid of it. You don't need to turn the TVs off. You don't need to run from it. Now, do you need to expose yourself and turn the radio on the way home and watch the news at night? No, you do not need to overexpose yourself to it. But don't give the sense that you're running from it. Just face it. It's tough right now. And the truth is, we've all been there. I wanted to, if I could say to Mitch, we've all been here where you are. Nobody's exempt. And sooner or later, you face these kind of existential moments when everybody thinks that you can't do it. And we're going to tip our cap. If you battle your way out of it, we're all going to say, wow, that was really something. But in the meantime, do not overplay the fact that, yes, there is stuff everywhere and I'm not going to run from it. Face it head on. He means to head it on, means to say, I'll face it head on. But he probably shouldn't have mentioned, you know, turn the TVs off.
Yeah, probably not. But I think you're right. We don't have to overreact. And we can certainly understand the sentiment. But having said that, he did inspire our next summit. Well,
nonetheless,
nonetheless, our BFFs to overreact.
You,
listen, yeah. Oh, wait, do you all have remotes or just you?
Here's
what we're
going to
do. We're here in our. We got some nice TVs in our living room.
These look good.
Apparently, yeah, they do look good. We're going to talk about who we would turn off if we could. Yeah. Okay, so I don't know if that's nice or not, but that's what we're going to do. And we're going to start with quarterbacks, Victor. Who are you going to turn off?
Yeah, we got these beautiful TVs here, and we got Jameis Winston, Baker Mayfield, and Mitchell Trubisky
here. Oh, you get choices.
Okay. And I'm going to turn off Mitchell Trubisky here in the middle, mainly because, okay, let me turn him off again. Wait. There we go. He's out of there now. Mainly because of what Steve Young said. I think I understood what he meant by saying turn the TVs off, but he has to own up to the type of play that he's been performing this year, as well as that entire team and the way that they've been playing the game of football. He hasn't been making good decisions with the football. He's been a bit careless with it as well. He's taken some sacks that he probably shouldn't have taken. And then on the flip side, that defense hasn't come to play this year holistically as well. So just own up to it, Mitch. Understand where you are as a football team. Understand where you are individually as a quarterback for that team. And embrace it, attack it, and turn the page and look forward to the future.
And really do have a singular focus, which means truly ignoring the noise. Okay. So I just realized we have three TVs, so we got three choices here.
There we go.
Rob, we got Adam Gase down there, Freddie Kitchens, Zach Taylor. That's your coach's channel. Who are you turning off?
Oh, dear.
Man, I
got some choices.
I got to go with Adam Gase on this one.
Let's
and he's working so diligently right there.
There's the batteries. There we go. Batteries. I need new AAAs. I haven't been in school in a while, but 42%. What is that? 42%.
That's
Adam Gase's winning percentage. As a head coach, 42%. So, I mean, look, last year with Miami, he was fired. Then he's picked up by the Jets. And this season has just been just terrible, right? You got a lot of teams that have just completely destroyed his credibility as far as an offensive mind. And maybe he's better suited as an offensive coordinator. As a head coach, you have to have the ability to talk to many different players and be on the same page and have the team have your back. And I think a lot of the Jet players seem to have just, he's lost the team. Mm-hmm. So they've walked away. They've just said, you know what? A lot of guys don't want to be there. You got your leader on defense doesn't want to be there. So I just think that it's a lost cause in New York for Adam Gase.
Wow, he just
some strong sentiments over there, Rob.
He took it all the way there.
He went all the way there. All right, fair enough.
I love it.
JoJo's got the team channel. Mm. She's going to either turn off the Dolphins, who's at the Falcons,
or the Redskins. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. So you got a choice here.
So I think in this instance, it would be so easy to turn off the Dolphins simply because of all the talk about whether they're tanking or not and how bad they've been this season. But all of the teams up here have been bad. So I'm actually going to turn off the Falcons in the middle. And the reason for that is because they're the team that's actually on the 6-game losing streak. At least the Dolphins beat the Jets
last week.
The Redskins are on a 3-game losing streak. So that's like the least worst of the worst by comparison.
The lesser of the evil.
That's what I'm trying to say. So that is why I'm going with the Falcons. And also because they fired all of their coordinators last year. And now they just recently got to play musical chairs with their coaches. And it's like, man, what are you doing here? Because the blame was placed on them. Now you're still trying to put a Band-Aid on it. You still have no wins in 6-8 stuff. And you come out of the bye facing the Saints and the Panthers. So
good luck there. You don't need that clicker anymore because I'm afraid they may stay turned off. All right. Thank you, Mitchell Trubisky, and our apologies. You can turn us off. I think you don't see it because it's
after
TV's
the show.
We're not on in Hallis Hall.
We
right
are
now,
not on.
That is for sure.
I love Chicago. All right. Let's Antonio Brown is scheduled to meet with the NFL next week regarding accusations of sexually assaulting a number of women. This is according to our Josina Anderson. He will be allowed at that point to present his side of the story in hopes of possibly eventually being cleared to play. But we got a long way to go. And so right now it's time for a cup of Joe.
Mm.
JoJo, a lot of things going on, but let's start with this. I do want to show you this because this was just about noon today. Mm-hmm. Next level, if you will. Imagine conforming to a system, giving it 100% to see them treat me like this is unfairly making money off my sweat and blood. Expletive the NFL. I'll never play in that whatever. Treat black people the worst. Clear my name and go yourself. So, a tough timing, I think, before his meeting, but clearly there's some frustration and a lot of emotion boiling over at this point.
Well, outside of this tweet, what we do know now next week is that he has a date scheduled to meet with the NFL, which as of now is next Thursday. And what I'm told is that Antonio Brown has been eager to share his side and basically let people know what he feels like has taken place in regards to these allegations surrounding him that involve sexual assault and also battery and emotional distress. Now, the thing that is kind of the question now is, what is the likelihood that he actually gets to still play this season? Given that the interview is next week, that would be 7 games remaining in the season. The following week would be 6. And per the baseline of what the NFL has, allocated for situations that involve these allegations, he could potentially not play this season. Although there are sources around Antonio Brown that
tell me that he still has optimism that he could potentially play this season and that there are teams that are still interested.
And you say that because it would be a six-game suspension.
Potentially.
And if we have six games left, then obviously that takes care
for
of
the regular season.
Yeah.
Season, yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Understood. Again, that meeting next Thursday? Is that correct?
Meeting next Thursday. And also, I think the last point that I just want to make that I think will be very interesting is really what is the depth of the NFL's investigation? Because remember, in the accuser's complaint, she names a lot of people that she alleges that she told of the of her allegations. And it'll be interesting to see how many of those people the NFL have actually been able to investigate in a situation that, at least as of right now, is he said, she said.
Okay, understood. Dez Bryant is another wide receiver who could be looking for work. He was on Twitter last night and had this set to say, saying, I'm not trying to go nowhere and be a starter on a team. I want to contribute because I know I will be able to. I'm feeling good. In 2 weeks, I'm going to reach out to teams and see what happens. Let's go. Is there any interest from teams in signing Dez Bryant?
Well, here's the thing. I talked to Dez Bryant's trainer yesterday, and I said, you know, what do you make of this tweet? And he said, first of all, Dez Bryant is ready to go. He's nearing a year since he tore his Achilles. And I said, well, why is he saying 2 weeks? Why not just go now? And he said, per his opinion, that if he doesn't hear anything from teams in the next 2 weeks, that's when he's going to begin to start reaching out. He says that Dez Bryant told him that he weighs about 222 pounds right now. They've been working together, that he appears to be even more explosive out of his cuts, has his feet underneath him and what have you, and that per his opinion, Dez Bryant seems to be the happiest that he's been in terms of also letting go of the circumstances that surrounded his departure from the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay, understood. Now, the Chargers looked different last week against the Packers. That was a good thing for the Chargers, not a good thing for the Packers. So in the aftermath of that, what are you hearing about their offense?
Well, I talked to Chargers wide receiver Keenan Allen last night, and I said, what do you kind of attribute the progress that you guys were able to make under new offensive coordinator Shane Steichen, in which you guys had a season-high 442 yards on offense? And he told me, look, I think we just have a better flow and rhythm. I think we were better in terms of situational football, particularly third in short, we were able to stay on the field longer. He says that I felt at times the defenses that we were playing basically knew what we were about to do, and now everyone has more of an opportunity to get the ball. And I said, well, lastly, what do you feel like was inhibiting you prior to this change that Anthony Lynn made? He said, sometimes I felt like we went on the field and we would switch up personnel too much. He said, last week what we did is come out there and stick with one personnel and basically stick with that as we were progressing down the field and just let our guys go. And he feels like that made a world of difference. Obviously, we'll have an opportunity to see that Thursday Night Football as they play the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, that's right. Coming quick. It comes so quick. JoJo, thank you. Mm-hmm. With that, we'll take a look at the Modelo Gold Standard stat. Last season, five teams made the playoffs despite sitting 500 or worse through the first eight games of the season. At least one team 500 or worse through eight games has made the playoffs in 32 straight seasons. 1986 was the last season without one. And that's relevant, especially tonight, because this season there are several teams who still have a shot, even if they haven't had the best start. The Steelers, without Big Ben, AB, and Le'Veon, have the best odds out of the teams who are 500 or worse, followed by the Raiders, who play tonight, and then the Jaguars. With a win tonight, Oakland's chances jump to 33%. That's a little more than one in three, while the Chargers would jump to 12%. So they still have a long way to go. This is our version. We can't tackle him, really. At least like, but this is how we
get. As much as Rob may want to tackle him.
Yeah, this is how we get
pumped
up. All right. Look at that smile. He was like smiling ear to ear watching
it's
that.
It's like, oh, yeah, you used to play.
Oh, yeah. All right, he's our star now. Victor with the cruise control. And it means, again, we're going to have two roads.
Okay.
And we're going to look at who goes where, okay? Because there's choices. I like this one.
Yeah.
Okay, more successful long-term. Of course, the choice is Daniel Jones with the Giants, Sam Darnold, the Jets.
Okay, we're going more successful long-term.
Yep.
So I'm going to go with long-term, I guess we got to go with the choo-choo train, right? Because it takes its time.
Oh,
it goes a little slow. I think in terms of the organization and the Giants, the way they perceive Daniel Jones, they're willing to take those bumps and bruises with him. They're willing to see him grow. They want him to mature. Mature as he plays the position. He has to show that now over the next, season, because he's going to, obviously there's going to be more pressure put on him each and every year. But I think the organization of the Giants are backing him and they want to see him succeed. So I'm going with Daniel Jones. Always helps when you have the backing of the front office.
I don't disagree. Obviously, they got a new GM who didn't draft him.
Well, exactly. This is cruise control and this is your thing, so you have to pick a side. So for me, I just think that if he has a little bit of help, just a little bit of help, both of these guys are going to be good quarterbacks, but Sam needs a little bit of help because right now, he's struggling.
Rob's like, this is your segment, but I don't mind if
struggling.
I do.
He's still having some help.
In an ambulance, which isn't a good sign.
And I think the issue here with Sam Darnold is ever since he played the Patriots, we still haven't seen him recover. And in fact, it's getting exponentially worse. So that's the issue right now. Even though he's still having a turnover issue, fumble issue, what have you, he seems a little bit more in command right now than Sam Darnold does. And I agree with you that he has the support and the extra reinforcements
Can we document that? She agrees.
I do agree with me. Temporarily.
Okay. Now, we talk long-term here. This next one is really for this weekend. Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Browns play the Bills. Baker was obviously the number one overall pick, and I think Josh Allen was 7.
Yep.
So who has the edge in this matchup?
Okay, so for this matchup, if we talk about the Cleveland Browns and we talk about the energy and everything that's been talked about with them on how they're trying to get off the schneid and trying to get themselves back on track, I think this is the week that they do it. And
really?
I don't even know what emoji to pick here, but I'm going to go here. Based on them just have, based on A, Baker
Mayfield. You're not that confident if you put him on a scooter.
I mean, I got nothing.
How about a motorcycle?
I got nothing. Right. Okay, listen, I'll go motorcycle. Okay. We'll go both.
Baker
we'll go
seems
both.
Like a motorcycle.
You know what? Whatever.
It's okay.
Keep talking.
Yeah.
On the premise, Baker Mayfield has more weapons and has more playmakers on his team to get the job done. They have to find ways to get those playmakers in space for them to be productive, for them to show off their athleticism and their playmaking ability. I think they do that this week because their backs are against the wall. I think Baker plays better when his back's against the wall, but this is the week where they have to get it done or the season will be lost.
All right.
I don't disagree with that.
That's why I do this.
Okay, he's got the motorcycles, right?
So we talk about Buffalo.
What do we say? What do we say about Buffalo?
What do we say?
They had a great defense. So you think that Baker, he's struggling. He's going to go and play one of the best defenses in the NFL?
I'm with Rob on this one.
He's going to go off?
Well, I do this. I think so. I think they're going to put a game plan together to get the ball to those playmakers early and often because they haven't been doing so.
They haven't.
They will. Look for reverses. Look for screens
like
for Odell Beckham Jr.
That's a big history.
All the things that have potentially been available to do since then. Okay, a couple things.
And they haven't done it.
One thing you said is his back's against the wall. First of all, their backs were against the wall the week before 100%. And the week before and the week 100%. Before that. And secondly, this team is doing better despite the resources that they have on this side.
Agreed.
And I feel like, okay, you know, Baker Mayfield's going through all these different changes with his mustache or whatever. You don't know what's going on. You know, it's
going through a mid-season struggle.
After this game, the stash is gone.
It's gone. I mean, we might even be lost. No
Baker, I believe in you, sir.
Listen,
don't let me down this week, no question
he has more moxie. No question he has the better resources. However, right now, the magic carpet is riding on this side.
Point,
as of right now.
at some point, Joe, that playmaking and those guys have to show up. Baker has to get those guys the ball. And I think this is the week where those guys show up and it finally comes together. Now, will it come together the rest of the way? I don't know. But this week,
and
I have
to say, it did come together a little bit better in Denver. Mm-hmm. Okay, but the issue was the red zone. They still have to convert in the red zone. So they got to get that.
Guess what? You guys talk too much. We can't do the last.
All right,
you
got to
go. Sorry. You got to go. But coming up on Monday Night Football, an NFC West matchup. We've got the NFL's final undefeated team hosting Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. That is 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Our coverage begins, as always, with Monday Night Countdown at 6. The Browns, as we mentioned before, will face the Bills on Sunday, and it looks like Cleveland will have Kareem Hunt back from his 8-game suspension. Hunt is expected to make his team debut with Cleveland looking to snap a 4-game losing streak. Here is Hunt on his return.
Like 342 days, you know, I've been counting down, and I'm just excited. A lot of, you know, mixed emotions, high and low. It's going to be a very fun, emotional game, and I'm definitely going to be excited to get out there and, you know, do whatever I can to play the role and help this team win. It means so much to me, and I just know that I really appreciate the fact that I get to go out and do this every day. And it made me really appreciate. It made me really appreciate it more. You know, get waking up every morning and coming to work. Even though those days I didn't like doing it, but now it's like, yeah, I get to go to work again today, and now it's just a great feeling to be able to, you know, come here and train and put the grind in.
Odell Beckham Jr. leads the Browns in receiving yards, but has yet to find his groove on third and fourth down. He's been targeted 17 times and has only 7 receptions. He is averaging 6 yards per catch. That's the worst on the team in that particular situation. Browns reporter Jake Trotter joins us now. And obviously a topic of conversation, Jake, there and elsewhere, is about Baker Mayfield and OBJ getting on the right track. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Wendy, that's the very question I asked Baker Mayfield on Wednesday. How do you get this connection going with you and Odell Beckham? Mayfield ranks dead last in the NFL in total QBR targeting wide receivers, which is incomprehensible considering he's got Odell on one side and Jarvis Landry on the other. You know, Mayfield told me that, listen, we got to get this connection going by force feeding Odell early on in the game, regardless of the coverage. It's Odell Beckham. He's going to be double covered, but we got to give him a chance to make an impact early in the game while we wait for those perfect opportunities to take shots downfield. Mayfield said that that's something we've had to learn the hard way. Just a few minutes ago, I asked Odell Beckham about what Mayfield said, and he responded with, whatever, I'm just here to help this team win. Wendy?
Jake, thank you. Listen, something to watch. It could have fantasy implications as well. I have OBJ. It's not working out. Anyway, time now for Matthew Berry's Love Hate. It's a perfect segue.
No doubt.
We're talking about matchups, of course, the matchups you like, and we'll start glass half full. So
right.
Take us through it.
So players I love this week based on their matchups that expect to exceed their ESPN projection, right? And we start with Devin Singletary in Buffalo, Wendy. It's a great matchup against the Browns. Cleveland allowing the third most rushing yards per game this season. That's not Baker Mayfield's fault. And the last 2 weeks, Singletary has played 66% of the net snaps. You compare that with Frank Gore, who's just playing 32%. 30 combined touches in those two games. 3 or more catches in both those games. He's being used on all 3 downs here. Again, the Browns allowing 4.9 yards per carry. That is fourth most in the NFL. I'm also crazy about Christian Kirk. I know, tough week last week, but I am as a top 15 play this week against a Buccaneers team that gives up a league-high 45.5 fantasy points to opposing wide receivers, and they allow over 9 slot receptions per game. That's tied for the most in the NFL. That's where Kirk runs a decent amount of his routes. In fact, 72% of his fantasy points this year have come from the slot. And also Jameis Winston.
How about this on the list, on the love list?
Yeah, Jameis Winston, who's had time on both lists this year, Wendy, but this week he makes the love list. I'm as a top 6 play this week. Cardinals allow a league-high 24 fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks. They've allowed 3 or more passing touchdowns in 3 of their last 4 games. Arizona blitzes at a very high rate, and against the blitz this year, Winston has actually been very good, 4th in yards per pass attempt.
Okay, so sometimes you exceed expectations, sometimes you fall below the bar,
sure.
And that's where we land here with those matchups you don't care for this week.
That's right. It's not about the player. It's just about the matchup and fantasy points here. And somebody I'm not crazy about this week, Wendy, is Joe Mixon of the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know that it's Joe's fault, honestly. That offensive line just has really, really struggled. But so far, 4 games this year with under 20 rushing yards from Mixon. His last rushing touchdown came in week 15 of last year, Wendy. And then you think about Baltimore that allows the second fewest rushing yards per game this season. Nick Chubb, the only running back with more than 65 rushing yards in a game against the Ravens. Mixon makes the hate list this week, as does DK Metcalf, one of the stars of last week. But I think this is going to be tougher against the San Francisco 49ers. Remember, over 50% of Metcalf's fantasy points this year have come on the deep ball. Well, San Francisco allowing the fewest catches and second fewest yards per game to wide receivers this year, and the second lowest completion percentage on deep passes. And we may see some Josh Gordon as well. And also Jared Goff on the road to Pittsburgh. We've talked a lot about his struggles away from Los Angeles. Now at Heinz Field, he has struggled on the road this year. He has just a 1.2 touchdown interception rate. He averages under 15 fantasy points per game. Steelers, for all the struggles they've had on offense this year, they allow just 14.8 fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks this season. So under 15 points, even in a week where you got 6 teams on a bye, it's hard to trust Jared Goff's anything more as a QB2 this week.
All right, Matthew Berry, thank you. Catch the fantasy show on ESPN Plus. And I miss you in your green and
I know,
all your,
I
and all
do
your
too.
Green glory from last week. But
I appreciate
this
that.
This is all right too, Matthew. Thank you.
Thanks, Wendy.
It's time for Making Smarter Decisions, informed by IBM Watson. Josh Jacobs had a monster game against the Lions last week.
Wow.
Rushing for 120 yards and 2 touchdowns. He gives Jacobs a ceiling of 23 points tonight against the Cardinals and a floor of only 8.3. All right. Not a lot of time, but time to pick them. JoJo. What
you got? I'm starting first. No, Stephen?
Yeah, no.
Okay, I am going to go with the Chargers after, you know, their offense showed some good stuff against the Green Bay Packers. They got the Chargers winning 24-20. And we're, guess who he's picking based on his outfit? Right here. Right, right here. Okay.
I'm going Oakland, baby. 28-24. Inspired me.
All right. I'm going for the man that you just mentioned, Wendy, Josh Jacobs. He's going to run loose all over the Chargers. I'm going 24-20, Oakland.
Okay, yeah. Listen, it's going to be 50-50. Somebody's going to be right and wrong. I got the Chargers 24-21.
Oh, my opportunity to get back on y'all.
Bookended here.
Listen, the jump is next, everybody, and also enjoy football tonight. Back tomorrow. See you then.
I'm Rachel Nichols.
See ya.